morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March the 1st, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The African Union reacts to reports that Africans in Ukraine are being refused the right to safely leave the country. And climate scientists are warning that climate change will soon be irreversible without decisive government action.
Human activities have warmed the planet at a rate not seen in at least the past 2,000 years.
More than half of all HIV-positive babies in Kenya are resistant to antiretroviral drugs even before they begin treatment.
It would be interesting to carry out more longitudinal studies to investigate the impact of these mutations on the antiretroviral therapy outcomes among these infants, including their mothers.
We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And for our top story, the African Union says it is disturbed by reports that African citizens in Ukraine are being refused the right to cross borders to safety as they flee the conflict in the country. Thousands of Africans and other foreign nationals, mostly students, have been scrambling to leave the country following Russia's invasion. But as hundreds of thousands flock to Ukraine's borders, overwhelming authorities in neighboring countries, reports have emerged that Africans are being treated differently and sometimes prevented from leaving. Senegal's President Macky Sall, who serves as AU chair, and Moussa Faki Mahamat, the head of the AU commission, said in a joint statement that reports that Africans are singled out for unacceptable dissimilar treatment would be shockingly racist and in breach of international law. The government of Poland has denied that race is a factor in determining who crosses its border with Ukraine. Meanwhile, Ukraine has acknowledged that women and children are favored to leave the country before all others. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on all parties in the Russia-Ukraine war to lay down arms and accept mediation. Ramaphosa also asked the United Nations to do more to foster negotiations. His sentiments have been echoed by many South Africans who worry that the economic and social impact of the war will soon hit Africa. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Addressing an intergovernmental national litigation forum in Pretoria today, President Ramaphosa said the conflict should be subjected to mediation, negotiation, and engagement. He described the war as unnecessary, saying it is causing death and destruction. He also expressed unhappiness with those expected to bring the warring parties to the negotiation table.
Particularly the United Nations Security Council, they are the ones who should be getting more and more engaged in a mediation process. And one does not see that happening. One does not see that full engagement to bring the hostilities to an end.
Agreement came from many South Africans across divides. Innocent Gadimeng is a third-year communications and media studies student at the University of Johannesburg. The 24-year-old told VOA how worried he is about Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The dependent countries to those countries will suffer as a result. The world right now, especially with COVID and everything, cannot afford such a huge thing happening here.
His views are shared by Docs Diesel, an entrepreneur and artist based in Johannesburg. He said he fears South Africa could soon start feeling the pinch of the rising oil prices.
I'm worried. We're going to suffer.
The more there's becoming problems with the oil, the prices go up. The more the gases go up, the more people have to pay more. The more money, the more the economy goes down.
And Sipamandla Zondi, an international relations expert at the University of Johannesburg, said South Africa is correct in calling for a peaceful resolution to the Russia-Ukraine war.
I think South Africa's position has been very strong. It's the position of the majority of countries in the world. It says what they need to do is to sit down both sides and come to an amicable position.
Ramaphosa said when South Africans were faced with two choices, fighting or negotiating for freedom, it was the latter that brought permanent peace to the country. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the sanctions that followed has pushed the price of oil to over $100 per barrel, the highest level in 8 years. It also opened an opportunity for African oil producers like Nigeria, Angola, Libya, and Algeria to cash in with more crude oil exports. But a lack of refineries in Africa means that crude oil exporters will also have to pay more for imported fuels, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Crude oil prices hit $105 per barrel last week, the highest mark since 2014, and up by 47% since December, amid fears that supplies from Russia may be impacted by its war with Ukraine. Russia accounts for about 10% of the world's crude oil output, making it the third biggest producer globally behind the United States and Saudi Arabia. But experts say the Ukraine invasion and the sanctions slapped on Russia by Europe and the United States could significantly reduce demand for Russian products and increase the demand for Africa's. Isaac Boti is a public finance expert in Abuja.
For Africa, it's a kind of game we can look into. It's an opportunity. It presents that window of opportunity for African countries to see how they can increase their production capacity and meet the needs of the global demand of crude.
Nigeria is Africa's largest producer of oil at about 1.9 million barrels a day, followed by Libya, Angola, and Algeria. That positions those countries to reap windfall profits from rising oil prices. But economic analyst Paul Enyim notes that Nigeria will have to pay on the other end for finished products like gasoline.
At the end of the day, it's going to hit on our economy. We may think, you understand, we will gain. Perhaps oil prices will go up because of the crises here and there. But hey, remember we don't refine our crude oil.
All of Nigeria's refineries were shut down in 2020 because of money and maintenance issues and have yet to reopen. The country now depends entirely on imports to meet its fuel needs. For weeks, Nigeria has been battling to increase its national fuel supply after authorities recalled millions of liters of tainted imported petrol from circulation, causing a major shortage in West Africa's most populous nation. In contrast, Algeria, which does have refineries, said this week that it would supply Europe with petroleum products if necessary. But he says it's a good example for other African nations.
We need to develop our capacity to produce locally. We need to concentrate on our industrialization policies and see how we can expand this base. We need to look at various trade agreements that are existing.
As Russia's war on Ukraine persists, experts say the shifting focus on Africa could be both a blessing and a burden. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Daybreak Africa continues. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is sending shockwaves through the world's staple grain markets. For Arab countries in Africa, this would create a food security problem. See, Egypt gets 15% of its wheat from Ukraine and 55% from Russia. Moscow provides 30% of Morocco's wheat imports and 46% of Sudan's. Tunisia gets 48% from Ukraine. Christopher Barrett is a professor of applied economics and international professor of agriculture at Cornell University. He spoke to reporter Angie Omer about the impact he envisions for the war on food security in these countries.
The Russian invasion is impacting people well outside the borders of Ukraine because of its impact on food markets. The mechanisms run essentially through food prices. And let me try to summarize really briefly how this works. And the food price increases, just like the food price increases in 2008-09 or in 2011-12, will cause significant human suffering in places that rely on importing cereals from these countries. And that risks folks fomenting political instability in those countries as well. The key mechanisms really work like this. The big thing is wheat prices, because Russia and Ukraine are both major wheat exporters. And as you highlighted, countries in the region are significant importers of wheat from Russia and Ukraine. Wheat prices are already up about 10% just on the month due to the disruption of already contracted exports from those two countries and the expectations of further problems delivering on existing or expected future contracts. And keep in mind that food prices had already been rising with oil price rises and supply chain disruptions throughout the world before this war began. Year on year, wheat prices are up 25 to 40% globally. The sanctions on Russia and disruption of the pipeline that runs from Russia through Ukraine to Europe is almost certainly going to keep driving oil prices higher. Like wheat, oil prices are up by about 10% just over the last month and 50 to 60% year on year.
The disruptions come at a time when global crop prices have already soared to record levels. Could the rise in wheat price result in social unrest if Arab countries resorted to stop subsidizing bread prices?
Yeah, so there are really two different policy domains that matter here to preventing social unrest in Arab or African countries. The first are the policies in those countries themselves. We saw in 2008 and 2011 with the global food price spikes then that there was social unrest. Indeed, there was significant violence, food price riots, and in a few cases, government overthrow in places where the population didn't feel government was supporting them, that people were already struggling to feed their families. Globally, before the pandemic, 3 billion people couldn't afford a healthy diet. That number has been driven up by hundreds of millions by the COVID pandemic. And if food prices go up by another 10 or 20% because of this war, you're going to see tens, if not hundreds of millions more people really stressed to feed their families. Governments that fail to provide the support that families need are going to be subject to increased pressure. People will get upset. They'll take to the streets in places that are already fragile politically. This can be exceedingly disruptive. So those countries' government response in ensuring a social safety net is really crucial here.
Will the Arab states be able to offset some of the rise in grain prices with the expected rise in oil prices?
Some will. So countries like Egypt, there's rough equivalence between their oil exports and their grain imports. So if price rises for the two are roughly equivalent, then those should net out, that there would be increased revenues flowing into Egypt from hydrocarbons exports that it could channel to support keeping food prices stable for its population. Whether it does that or not is a different question.
That was Christopher B. Barrett, a professor of applied economics and international professor of agriculture at Cornell University. He was speaking with reporter Angie Omar. An expert group of 270 climate scientists warned the dire impacts of climate change soon will be irreversible unless governments act decisively to tackle these imminent global threats. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the launch of the latest report by the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
IPCC's chairman, Ho Sung Lee, does not mince words. He says the stakes of our planet have never been higher.
Human activities have warmed the climate at a rate not seen in at least the past 2,000 years. We are on course to reaching global warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius within the next two decades. And temperature will continue to rise unless the world takes much bolder action.
He says the action governments take today will shape how people will be able to adapt to climate change and how nature will respond to increasing climate risks. Deborah Roberts is co-chair of the IPCC Working Group 2, which produced the report. She says the scientific evidence that climate change is a threat to human well-being and the health of the planet is unequivocal.
Climate change combines with unsustainable use of natural resources, habitat destruction, deforestation, and growing urbanization, as well as inequity and marginalization. 3.3 to 3.6 billion people live in global hotspots of high vulnerability to climate change.
These include parts of Africa, as well as South Asia, Central and South America, small islands, and the Arctic. The report warns people living in these hotspots will likely experience severe food shortages leading to malnutrition should global temperatures rise by 2 degrees Celsius by 2050. Despite these dire predictions, scientists say the report presents a reality check on what has been done to stem global warming and what remains to be done. They say the report offers solutions on how to adapt to climate change and mitigate their worst effects. Scientists say some challenges can be addressed by creating a more equitable and sustainable world, by moving away from fossil fuels to renewable energy, and by using indigenous knowledge to protect nature. These steps, along with adaptation and mitigation projects, can help create change, but poorer countries will need wealthier countries to help finance them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than half of all HIV babies in Kenya are resistant to one or more antiretroviral drugs, or ARVs, even before they begin treatment. That is according to a new study by the Kenya Medical Research Institute that says ARV resistance among children has been growing since 2014. Maureen Ojambo reports from Sacramento in California.
2014 was the earliest year that researchers of the Kenya Medical Research Institute, KEMRI, picked up samples for the study of resistance to antiretroviral drugs among children in Kenya. They collected dried blood spots from infants below the age of 18 months through the Kenya Early Infant Diagnosis Program in 2014, 2017, and 2018. In 2014, nearly 58% of the babies had drug-resistant mutations. KEMRI senior research scientist Sheila Kageha says there is a need to carry out more studies to investigate the impacts of such mutations.
Findings were from a cross-sectional study in infants born to HIV-positive mothers newly diagnosed with HIV. It would be interesting to carry out more longitudinal studies to investigate the impact of these mutations on the antiretroviral therapy outcomes among these infants, including their mothers.
Kageha says despite the government's support for HIV awareness campaigns, pregnant mothers are not attending clinics as required, thereby putting the unborn babies at risk. She says the increase was because of possible maternal exposure to antiretroviral therapy.
Another issue is suboptimal adherence to ART amongst some of these mothers. There are still barriers in accessing HIV testing and treatment in some of these regions. There's also a challenge on retention in care. Mothers, due to other factors, don't return to ANC as required. WHO has recommended 4 antenatal clinic visits for this group, but then most of them do not get to meet those requirements.
According to the World Health Organization, over the past decade, the world has witnessed an increase in the use of antiretroviral therapy, which has saved the lives of millions of people living with HIV/AIDS. However, the increased use of HIV medicines comes with the emergency of HIV drug resistance. As a result, many people find that their HIV medicines are not working. Kageha says HIV drug resistance is a global challenge that government should address.
HIV drug resistance remains a significant challenge globally, particularly in resource-limited settings where HIV policies and healthcare gaps limit HIV drug resistance surveillance and also prevention and handling of virologic failure. However, Kenya, like any other global state, has national action plans to prevent, monitor, and respond to HIV drug resistance. These plans are informed by the Global Action Plan on HIV drug resistance, coordinated by the WHO.
According to UNICEF, the number of children living with HIV in Kenya fell from 180,000 in 2010 to 111,500 in 2020, partly due to improved access to services. The World Health Organization's report on HIV drug resistance 2021 says Nearly one half of infants born to mothers infected with HIV have HIV drug resistance to one or more NNRTI, a drug that help keep the disease from spreading. Close to 107,000 Kenyan children below 14 years of age are living with HIV, but only about 73,000 are receiving treatment. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
In South Africa, an activist group is suing the government to reveal details of its contracts with COVID-19 vaccine makers. The Health Justice Initiative says transparency is needed to ensure fair pricing and prevent corruption. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
How much did South Africa pay for each unit of its COVID-19 vaccines and on what terms? Those are some of the questions posed by health activists in a lawsuit filed last week against the country's health department. Fatima Hassan is the founder and director of the Health Justice Initiative.
It makes it very difficult to hold anybody to account in this pandemic, especially, you know, in the face of really gross vaccine inequity. In the context of South Africa, is that in a pandemic, when you have a state of disaster like we've had, there needs to be heightened checks and balances. We need to, you know, be able to hold the different decision makers to account.
She says freedom of information requests filed for the documents have gone unanswered. Hassan says it's not just a matter of what South Africa paid for the vaccines, but also where the country falls in the context of the world's response to the pandemic. She wants to know if any stipulations were made that left some countries paying more or waiting longer for vaccines.
What are the implications then for all the agreements and contracts that almost, you know, every single country in the world has signed and put money on the table? Some people have, you know, governments have had to borrow money. There's also been a situation of, we believe, like a case of double standards where some countries were allowed to totally control the supply.
South Africa's health department spokesperson Foster Mohale confirmed to VOA that its legal team is reviewing the court filing and will respond through legal channels. Mohale says several contracts between the government and COVID-19 service providers have been released publicly. But, he added, contracts that included non-disclosure agreements cannot be released. Legal experts say the necessity of non-disclosure agreements during the pandemic is hard to justify. Hio Kito is the director of the African Procurement Law Unit at South Africa's Stellenbosch University.
We know that there's been non-disclosure agreements signed around the world dealing with these supply contracts. We don't know why. There might be trade secrets contained in some of these contracts that would be detrimental to the business of the supplier, and that could certifiably demand that those be kept confidential. But none of those reasons would justify a blanket confidentiality on contracts.
The Health Justice Initiative says non-disclosure of contracts leaves countries at risk of overpaying. Fatima Suleiman is a professor of the discipline of pharmaceutical sciences at the University of KwaZulu-Natal.
There's the ability for pharmaceutical companies to obscure information and then, you know, start at a much higher price than they need to, rather than actually working with governments to ensure maximal access. Pharmaceutical companies are giving stock to those that can pay the highest. They're obscuring prices. They're making large profits for their shareholders and themselves. And it's not a public health imperative anymore for these companies. It's an investment opportunity.
South Africa has faced numerous scandals related to spending for its COVID-19 response. The country's special investigation unit implicated a former health minister for allegedly laundering money through fraudulent contracts. The Health Justice Initiative is now waiting for the government's response to the lawsuit. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.